The subject that we're going to be covering is this one, Bhakti Loka, Illuminations on Bhakti by Srila Bhaktivinod Thakur. This is what we'll be discussing. Now, I had some copies that were distributed a few months back when I knew that I was going to be doing this. Who did I give those copies to distribute to? Are there any copies remaining? Back at the ranch. How many? 6, 7, maybe 8 copies. Okay. If there are persons here who would like to have a copy, you can see Murari. He's behind the camera over there. Maybe you can just raise your hand and he can take note. All right. So during lunch break, Murari, they can see you. You take their names, and tomorrow we'll supply for those that don't have a copy as best we can. The way that the schedule is written, I just want to do a little preview of where we're going. There'll be split sessions with lunch in between. That's the sandwich. And then Sunday, can we do something with the ring back? Just you can pull with the dials. It's just there's a ring back somehow. It's got a bit of an echo. Echo. So I figured 7 sessions. 6 sessions during this Memorial weekend. And if we require it, I think we're going to require it, 1 session on the 31st. So, what I intend to do is give a little introduction to the whole subject matter. Little introduction to Rupa Goswami, its author, introduction to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and we'll cover then one by one the topics. There's 12 topics. There's 12 segments to this presentation. 6 items that are unfavorable and 6 items that are favorable for the development of bhakti. Ring back and the sound system is unfavorable. We have to do something about that. So the text is taken from Rupa Goswami's Upadesh Amrita. Prabhupada made a translation of it in a summary fashion, Nectar of Instruction. Upadesh Amrita, Nectar of Instruction. There are instructions written by Rupa Goswami that start, well, they start at the very first verse, starts at a very advanced stage. It's explaining how someone who is able to control different pushings or urges, again, 6 in number, can make disciples all over the world. That's where it starts. And then there are items that are favorable and items that are unfavorable. Actually, in reverse order. Unfavorable, then favorable. And this nectar of instruction goes on describing the nature of loving exchanges amongst devotees of the Lord, the higher stages of attainment in spiritual life, the highest reservoir of attraction for those on the spiritual path, glorifications of Radha Kun specifically. And it ends and takes us to the Prema Bhakti stage. That's nectar of instruction. Out of the many books that Rupa Goswami wrote, Srila Prabhupada chose to translate his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu in a summary fashion, Nectar of Devotion, and this one, Nectar of Instruction, or Upadesha Amrita. So in Prabhupada's introduction to Nectar of Instruction, he describes that this is an introductory literature. He uses specifically for neophytes, but at the same time it's for neophytes, it takes one to the prema stage, so very, very quickly. For one who wants to advance to that prema stage, these understandings must be very carefully considered. Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes this again and again. Very carefully considered, very carefully understood, and very carefully applied. And again he says, if not, one will not advance. So that's our subject matter. These two verses from Nectar of Instruction explained by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So a little bit about Rupa Goswami. We could speak for hours about Rupa Goswami, and justifiably so, because according to the followers of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Rupa Goswami is the foremost of the six Goswamis in Vrindavan, foremost in a number of ways, specifically spoken by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. He invested in Rupa Goswami the fullness of his divine mercy. So Rupa Goswami and his brother Sanatan Goswami and his younger brother Anupam, they're descendants from a very elevated Brahmana line, Saraswat Brahman line from South India. And as the history goes, through a course of several generations, the family migrated from their original place, gradually heading in a northerly direction. There are various reasons involved in that, some family misunderstandings, etc. So the family ended up in the northern part of India, and from Sanatan Goswami and Rupa Goswami's childhood, they were very strongly attracted to Krishna worship. They were Krishna bhaktas as children. And as many great acharyas, they were extremely brilliant in their scholarship. Well, that's me. Oh my goodness. No. And as young men, skipping a lot of detail, as young men, they were sought after by the king, the Nawab Hussein Shah, to be engaged in his service in the government. Now, this is something that Brahmanas will not do, and it's something that Vaishnavas will not do, be engaged in Muslim kings' business. But the king was very smart, very diplomatic and clever, and he was known to be very cruel. So he said, "You have a choice." He met these three young brothers. He said, "You have a choice. We can torture all the Vaishnavas, or you can engage in service to the government." Let me know what your decision is. And if you engage in service of the government, I'll make lavish provisions for you so you can give shelter to all the Vaishnavas. Give you enormous wealth, enormous property. You can build all the temples you want, temples to Krishna, be happy, and make all the Vaishnavas happy. Or choose not to, and we'll mercilessly torture all the Vaishnavas in my kingdom till death. Let me know what your decision is. So it wasn't a difficult... It was a difficult decision, but it wasn't a difficult decision. They accepted service in the government of Nawab Hussein Shah. And there were three different positions that they accepted: home minister, finance minister, and minister of state. Something like being prime minister and in charge of the treasury of the whole kingdom. They were vastly learned. They could speak fluently in Arabic and Persian and Sanskrit and Bengali and three other languages that aren't identified, to my knowledge. Seven languages fluent. And very, very, very expert. And with the enormous wealth given by the king, they arranged in their homeland, in their quarters, gardens that resembled the places of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan: Govardhan Hill, Varsana, Nandagram, Radhakund, Shamakund, all the places of Krishna's pastimes. And regularly they would invite Vaishnavas, learned Vaishnavas, to come recite from Srimad Bhagavatam and discuss the topics of Krishna together very peacefully. So at the same time they were permitted to do this very wonderful activity under the auspices of this wicked king, he was busy running here and running there with his armies conquering new territories to make them responsible to govern. In other words, they were helping this bitterly nasty ruler to become more and more successful. So they were torn. And they came to know of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's presence in Jagannath Puri, and they engaged in communicating with him by sending letters. The system was quite different than the systems that we have now. They wrote, and Brahmanas would carry the letter to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. On one occasion, one letter came back from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in a very short form, indicating what consciousness that they should carry. The consciousness, he indicated, was like a woman who has a paramour. She's very, very attentive to the duties of her home and her household, while doing so all the time thinking, when will that chance be there that I can meet with my paramour? Her heart given to the paramour, her duties given to her affairs at home. So in this way, indirectly spoken, Rupa and Sanatan could understand. Lord Chaitanya was indicating the day will come when they can have his association openly. But for now, they had to attend to these duties. And at the time when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was making his second attempt to go to Vrindavan, his first attempt was immediately after accepting sannyas. Immediately after initiation from Ishwarapuri, he wanted to go to Vrindavan. He was checked by a voice from the sky indicating he should return to Navadvipa and fulfill his mission of appearing in this world first. After accepting sannyas was the second time, he was checked the second time by the request of Mother Sachi that he make his residence in Jagannath Puri. And on his third visit to Vrindavan, or attempt to visit Vrindavan, he made quite a detour. Instead of going from Jagannath Puri, let's see, you're looking this way, from Jagannath Puri to Vrindavan, he went from Jagannath Puri towards Navadvip, and he stopped in Ramakeli. And there's great detail described in Bhakti Ratnakar of the huge procession that was accompanying Lord Chaitanya. Thousands of followers. And they entered in the precincts of Ramakeli, which was very near the capital of Nawab Hussein Shah, who was known to be a wild man, a very dangerous person. Word quickly came to the Nawab Hussein Shah that there's a saintly person, a Vaishnava saint, who's come into your kingdom. He is approaching your capital city. What do you intend to do? So Lord Chaitanya Nawab Hussein Shah gathered more information about Lord Chaitanya. And he, after hearing of his qualities, his activities, and his impact upon those, whoever he came in contact with, the Nawab intelligently concluded that he's a genuine saint and he should be given all facility in my kingdom. But Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami, being very wise, could understand the nature of this person is very dangerous. In one moment, this direction, and the next moment, that direction. Just as he had done with us. You become ministers in my state, or I'll kill you and torture all the Vaishnavas and kill them too. Very, very dangerous person. So they came to get Lord Chaitanya's association. Again, they had been corresponding with him. They wanted very, very much to have his association. At the same time, they wanted to deliver this message, beware of Nawab Hussein Shah. Although, like anything, we want your association. He's too dangerous. You should not remain in this place. When they approached, this very famous verse was spoken by them. Those of us that are regularly practiced at offering of our food to the deities or on our altars at home or in the temple, this verse was spoken and to this day preserved, enshrined as their glorification of Lord Chaitanya. Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Gauratushe Namaha. Spontaneously appreciating the quality of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the most munificent, benevolent, kind, merciful agent of the Supreme Lord, who is none other than the Supreme Lord himself appearing to distribute not only bhakti, but the highest stage of bhakti, Krishna Prema. they advise Chaitanya Mahaprabhu two things. Although they were recognizing his position, in their humble manner, they indicated, this is dangerous. Nawab Hushain Shah could do anything at any time and harm all the Vaishnavas, who knows? Although he's saying this, he can do that in the next moment. Best to protect the devotees by leaving this place. And when going to Vrindavan, it will not be respected by the residents of Vrindavan if you come in this way with a whole big entourage. Better to go alone, very simply, into the holy dham. So Mahaprabhu considered their indication, and the next morning he returned back to Jagannath Puri, appreciating the indications they had given. Later, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met with both of them, Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami, and instructed them extensively in the science of devotional service that's recorded in Chaitanya Charitamrita and in a summary form in teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And later on, both of them separately visited Lord Chaitanya in Jagannath Puri. Now there were two occasions where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke before the other devotees of the Lord, indicating what special mercy he had given to Rupa Goswami. He's the most munificent, and the fullness of his mercy was given to Rupa Goswami as the acharya to imbibe and distribute both. And take within himself and distribute to others this message that he came into this world to give. Specifically amongst all of the exalted, qualified associates of Lord Chaitanya, Swarup Damodar, Ramananda Roy, Pundarik Vidyanidhi, all of them, Srivas Pandit, Rupa Goswami specifically, he indicated in a singular way. One incident was when Rupa Goswami, when traveling from Vrindavan, after being instructed by Lord Chaitanya in Prayag, he went to, under Lord Chaitanya's order, to reside in Vrindavan with two services: excavate the places of Krishna's pastimes, which we now see, the places of Krishna's pastimes with wonderful temples and so many indicators of where these places of pastimes were, which had been lost over thousands of years after Krishna's pastimes had taken place, and to write transcendental literatures, indicating that the time will come you can come and visit in Puri. So on one pilgrimage, leaving Vrindavan, heading towards Puri, it's described that Rupa Goswami was contemplating writing one book that was describing Krishna's pastimes. And in the course of his travel, he spent the evening, one evening, at Satyabhamapur, and in his dream at night, Satyabhama appeared and instructed him that this book that you are composing should be written as two dramas, not one. The two dramas should be Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan and Krishna's pastimes outside of Vrindavan. And when Rupa Goswami awoke, she didn't identify herself as Satyabhama, but he could understand. This is Satyabhama directly instructing me. So the two dramas then he was contemplating in his mind as Vidagdha Madhava and Lalita Madhava. after Rupa Goswami reached Puri, he was assigned to stay with Haridas Thakur. When devotees would come to visit Jagannath Puri to associate with Lord Chaitanya, specifically Lord Chaitanya personally arranged for their accommodations. And he arranged for their accommodations according to their mood, what would be most appropriate and suitable. Rupa Goswami had stay with Haridas Thakur because both of them were of like disposition, specifically very, very humble. Painfully humble. Because it became known, I'll illustrate this, when it became known that Rupa Goswami was composing a drama, one day when visiting Haridas Thakur and Rupa Goswami, Lord Chaitanya said the same thing that Satyabhama had said, which Rupa Goswami had not disclosed to anyone, that he had this dream. He said, when you write this drama, it should be two. Krishna's pastimes inside and outside Vrindavan. Then Rupa Goswami could understand Lord Chaitanya is omniscient and the instruction of Satyabhama is now confirmed. So as some time passed, the composition of those two dramas was underway and Lord Chaitanya coming to visit Haridas Thakur was his daily practice after visiting the temple of Jagannath, taking their darshan, engaging in kirtan for some time. He would then receive some Jagannath prasad, which he would then, the next stop after visiting the temple was to visit Haridas Thakur and bring him Jagannath prasad, because both Rupa and Haridas were thinking themselves unfit to enter the temple of Lord Jagannath. Haridas, because he was born in a Muslim family, and Rupa Goswami, because he had taken service of a Muslim king and therefore had been rejected by his Brahmana group for that service that he had accepted. So, being considering themselves very fallen, they were unwilling to enter the temple of Jagannath. So Rupa Goswami was requested by Lord Chaitanya. When he came, Rupa Goswami went off to a distance and paid obeisances at a distance. Rupa Goswami was motioned to by Lord Chaitanya, come forward. Rupa Goswami was not moving to come forward, because he felt himself very fallen. It was not Rupa, Lord Chaitanya honored again and again the same mood of Haridas Thakur, who wouldn't take prasad with all the devotees because he felt himself so fallen. I want to emphasize this point. It wasn't pretense, it was their mood. So Rupa Goswami didn't reply, he didn't say no, but he just kept himself at a distance. So Lord Chaitanya began speaking while Rupa Goswami is at some distance. I understand you're composing one drama. I would like to hear some of the statements you have written in that drama. Again, Rupa Goswami remained silent. Knowing his mood, Lord Chaitanya smiled and he went away. The next day, he came with a whole entourage of devotees. Ramananda Roy, Swarup Damodar, Govinda, Gopinath Acharya, and many of the other senior Vaishnavas, they came for an audition to hear Rupa Goswami recite. And again, when they all came, they sat, they were given appropriate seats to sit on, they motioned for Rupa Goswami to come and sit with them. He didn't move. He maintained keeping himself before all the other devotees in a very humble position. Again, this was his mood, complete humility. So after much prodding, encouraging Rupa Goswami to recite, they wanted him to recite the opening verse of his first drama, Vidagdha Madhava. And the verse is the description of the chanting of the holy name, where he describes how much nectar is to be found in these two syllables, Krishna. As one chants these names, Krishna is dancing upon one's tongue. As one hears these names, Krishna enters one's ear and enters into the chamber of one's heart, and great showers of nectar are filling one's heart just by hearing these sounds of these names that make me desire to have hundreds of tongues and hundreds of ears just to hear these syllables, Krishna. The devotees were very, very pleased, commenting, "I've never heard such a wonderful description of chanting the holy name." And one by one, they enticed Rupa Goswami to speak his words, his verses of his dramas. And Ramananda Roy commented, "These aren't lines to a drama. This is transcendental showers of nectar coming from the spiritual world through the hand of Rupa Goswami. There's only one way that it's possible that he could have composed such wonderful literature." And he turned to Lord Chaitanya. "You must have given him some very special mercy." And Lord Chaitanya confirmed before all the devotees, "It's true. When I met with Rupa Goswami, I could understand that he was a fit candidate to represent me and carry forward this mission in my activities of giving Krishna consciousness to others. And so I've invested him with the fullness of my mercy." On another occasion, Lord Chaitanya made that identical statement, this time to Sarup Damodar. The occasion was around the time of Rath Yatra. Lord Chaitanya was reciting again and again and again a particular verse. The verse was the expression of Srimati Radharani in her mood of wanting to bring Krishna back to Vrindavan. So Rupa Goswami composed a companion verse in his own words that complemented exactly the same mood as Lord Chaitanya's verse that he was reciting, but in his own poetic manner. He wrote the verse on a palm leaf and stuck the palm leaf up in the thatched roof of his residence and went to take bath in the sea. While he was gone, Lord Chaitanya came to visit. He didn't find Rupa Goswami because he was not there, but he saw sticking from the roof one leaf. So he took the leaf, and when he saw the writing, he could immediately understand, oh, this is written by Rupa Goswami, because even his handwriting looks like strings of pearls. I've seen one, a picture in the, I forget what it's called, but very near a Krishna Balaram temple, an institute library, some kind of Vaishnava institute library. It's not run by ISKCON, but they have the original leaves upon which Rupa Goswami wrote, and I've seen pictures of it, and it's just to look at it. It's so beautiful. So Lord Chaitanya commented, "This is written by Rupa Goswami." just to see the handwriting. And then when he read the verse of Srimati Radharani's mood, pleading with Krishna to please come once again to Vrindavan, this seeing you here in Kurukshetra with horses and infantry and rattling chariots and armies and soldiers and all of the royal regalia. Although we're seeing you, this is not pleasing to our hearts. You are the same Krishna, and I am the same Srimati Radharani, and my prayer to you is, please come once again to Vrindavan by the banks of the Jamuna, under the Vetasi tree, smelling the fragrances of the Kandamba flowers and the sweet carried by the sweet breezes of Vrindavan, the sounds of the birds as they're making their wonderful songs. We want to see you once again in that mood, in that situation. Please come again. So pleased was Lord Chaitanya to read this poetry of Rupa Goswami. When he returned back to his residence, he described the whole situation to Surup Damodar and asked him, how is it possible that Rupa Goswami could understand my mind? Nobody understands my mind except you. How could he possibly know what my feelings were? And so with such poetic beauty, he has described it. Surup Damodar's reply was, I can understand from the poetry of Rupa Goswami that he must have received your mercy. Otherwise, it's not possible. And again, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu confirmed, it's true. When we met at the Dashashvamedha Ghat, I could see in this Rupa Goswami the qualifications to carry forward this mission. And so I gave to him the fullness of my mercy so that he could understand and so that he could carry forward this purpose of my coming into this world. Not an identical statement, but a very similar statement was made directly by Lord Chaitanya to Rupa Goswami in his residence in Gambira. That the term used by our acharyas describing Lord Chaitanya's communication, you will be the acharya in communicating the message of rasa, carrying forward my message to this world. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally experienced by his pastimes, he experienced the fullness of rasa up to the stage of Mahabhava. He didn't personally write literatures, but he instructed Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami specifically to compose transcendental literatures that expressed the range of his teachings. So when we read Rupa Goswami's writings, we should understand what it is that we're reading. Some of the writings of Rupa Goswami were so advanced, and Sanatan Goswami, so advanced and intimate in their disclosures of the pastimes of Krishna and Radha and the gopis in Vrindavan, that after their departure from this world, their nephew, Jiva Goswami, was at that point in time the senior most Vaishnava. He went through their writings. Jiva Goswami was keeping a library near Ratakund, a library of the writings of the Goswamis, some of the writings he considered were too confidential for the world to read in later generations. They would just not understand it, or they would wrongly understand it and would misuse those writings. So behind Sanatan Goswami's Samadhi Mandir, he created a Grantha Samadhi. He put some of those literatures to rest. So they were writing very confidential writings, because in his spiritual identity, Rupa Goswami is Rupa Manjari. Rupa Manjari, or the Manjaris, are very young in age in the spiritual world. Their age is younger than those of the Sakis, the confidential associates like Lalita and Vishakha. They're assisted by younger girls, Manjaris. And those younger Manjaris, without going too deeply into this, they were intimately engaged while Radha and Krishna were engaged in confidential exchanges with one another, because they're younger girls. In this way, Sarup Damodar and Ramananda Roy, who in Krishna's Leela are Lalita and Vishakha, even more intimate is Rupa Goswami as Rupa Manjari. And it is to Rupa Goswami that Lord Chaitanya taught the fullness of the science of rasa. We have these understandings that there are sambandha, avideya, and prayojana, three stages or groupings of spiritual knowledge. And Sanatan Goswami, with his deity Madan Mohan, are in charge of the sambandha gyan, and Rupa Goswami is teaching us of abhideya gyan, or the process of devotional service. Therefore, Prabhupada translated nectar of instruction. How do you practice devotional service? That's what we're going to be hearing. How do we practice devotional service so that we can come to the stage of love of God, at the level of Krishna Prema. I mean, it's meant as very practical instructions to go to that stage. And same nectar of devotion. So although the literature that we're going to be reviewing in the seminar is simple, and in some cases very strong in the philosophical side as well as the practical application side, we should bear in mind the purpose of Rupa Goswami's writing it is to fulfill the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There's one very nice prayer that we find in our Mangalacharna prayers at the beginning of Srimad Bhagavad Gita, after Om Ajnana Timarandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshura Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. The next verse, that's the prana mantra to one's guru, or to plural, to gurus. The next mantra is to Rupa Goswami. Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale. So that verse is saying the Sri Chaitanya Mano Abhishtam, the mana, literally, is very close to the English word mind, mana. And normally we think of mind as like here. Something's giving me a headache. I'm thinking too much about something that's causing me anxiety, so it's, we think of something here. But actually, the Prabhupada has explained this mind is, it's the heart. Thinking, feeling, and willing. It's when we get some impression of something, it registers in the heart. Just like, both on the positive and negative side. If somebody insults you, nobody should insult you. But if somebody insults you, you rascal, does it register here or does it register here? Straight to the heart. You nonsense! Or the other way. You're in Vrindavan before Radha Shama Sundara and you're just amazed at the beauty of their form and the waves of mercy that are radiating from them. And does it register between your ears and up here? It goes right to your heart. Recently in New Vrindavan, and generally our Prabhupada indicated our worship of the deities should be done with awe and reverence and great opulence. So it used to be on Tuesdays or something like that, but I think because there were so many devotees there, they had the whole altar was decorated with just so many flowers, lilacs and all the hibiscus and all the spring flowers. I mean, then when they opened the curtain, wow, and the fragrance was so, it just kept waves of sweet scents. Just couldn't take your eyes off of the deity. It's just so amazing. Prabhupada in Mayapur said that when we come before the deity form of the Lord each day, we should take an impression. It sounded like, you know, Murari with his cameras. Take some impression. Like you open the shutter and a little exposure on the film, or now that's the other system, the digital cameras. So some exposure is there. So Prabhupada said you carry that impression with you throughout the day. So some very, very strong feelings within the heart, especially the positive loving feelings towards the personality of Godhead. One should carry these. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came into this world to experience the ranges of such emotions that we don't know of in this world. And abhishtam means to make available. That's the mission. Sri Chaitanya Mana Abhishtam. That's Rupa Goswami's position. He was the distributor of that. So it's just like using these examples. The fragrance of those flowers that I experienced in New Vrindavan, or the distribution of that fragrance, or someone has this experience of some very, very, very great joy. Someone who you care very deeply about. Like you have heard in the testimonials of those persons who were in Srila Prabhupada's presence. And so many persons described that when Prabhupada glanced around the room and his eyes fell upon them, they felt that Prabhupada was looking right through them. And whatever their yucky stuff was, it just, Prabhupada saw it and just evaporated it. And they felt just purified just by his glance. And they speak about those, when devotees speak about those moments, they relive them. It stays with them. And although they had the experience, their narrating that experience is the distribution of that experience. So Rupa Goswami, Abhishtam, he was identified by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Rupa Manjari, but in his lila as Rupa Goswami, you are a fit person to explain to the world about my moods of love. And he did. And his moods of love were in relation to Radha's attraction for Krishna. How can we understand that? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu experienced it and Rupa Goswami exposed it. Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale. Stapitam, he established Yena Bhutale on the surface of this world. Swayam Rupa Gada Mayam Dadati. He freely gave. Dadati Svapadantikam. So our prayer to Rupa Goswami is that as he's given us this Upadesh Amrita and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, in his commentary, we'll be discussing Prabhupada's commentary, but this is far more elaborate. This is the preliminary to help us become qualified so that when we hear the discussions of other topics that are very confidential in the subject matter of Lord Chaitanya's deep feelings, we'll have the qualification that will move our hearts. Genuinely and effectively and permanently to that position. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is the author, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur is described as like the seventh Goswami. In fact, is the biography about him. That's the title of the book, the seventh Goswami, because like the six Goswamis, he also did, under the instructions of Lord Chaitanya, they excavated the places of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. Likewise, under the instruction of Lord Chaitanya appeared to Bhaktivinoda Thakur in a dream. He was on his way to Vrindavan. And Lord Chaitanya instructed him, don't go to Vrindavan, go to Navadvip and establish places of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. Establish the places of my pastimes. So he took that instruction, and he did. He fulfilled that instruction, and he instructed his son, Bhaktisiddhanta, to further excavate the places of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. And Bhaktisiddhanta instructed his disciples to further the same. And he wrote many books about Lord Chaitanya's teachings. The seventh Goswami is a very fit title. What can we say about Bhaktivinoda Thakur? Brilliant Acharya. So, such an inspired and inspiring personality. And he did so sheerly on spiritual strength. And in the course of reciting this, I want to deliberately read certain excerpts from this so we can just for the one purpose alone of getting a flavor of how Bhaktivinoda Thakur executed his service of bringing the instructions of Lord Chaitanya to the world in such a artful, expert, compelling way. Without exception, he said some very, very strong, sometimes even outrageous things, but it was always supported by Scripture. But it wasn't simply bashing people with the authority of Scripture. It was very, very gently he had the art of humble persuasion down. He was. This is how he presents. We'll see. I'll try to illustrate it. So you feel so comfortable being persuaded to the transcendental position through sound vibration of a very, 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 very empowered acharya. And I want to read just something that will help you appreciate once again where all this can take us. When Lord when Bhaktivinoda Thakur went to Navadvipa under Lord Chaitanya's instruction for him to do so, he wrote many books about Lord Chaitanya's pastimes in Navadvipa. So one of those books is Navadvipa Dham Mahatmya. In Navadvipa Dham Mahatmya, he describes himself, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as being one of the eternal associates of Krishna in Vrindavan. And by name, he identifies his name. He identifies his form. He identifies his service. I'm going to read just so you get some picture of how, on the spiritual platform, we're going to be discussing something way down here, like ABCs in Krishna consciousness. But it's to help us become qualified for this other we're just going to be hearing. The very, very intimate and confidential understandings of highly realized souls. So this is a quote from chapter 5 of Navadvipa Dham Mahatmya by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He's describing as if he's having a futuristic dream, a dream that didn't happen yet, what he will be experiencing. I will be unable to describe the sight I will behold. I will look into my heart and gaze upon it eternally. In my own grove, while cultivating that sight in my heart, I will serve constantly under the direction of the Sakis. Ananga Manjari, the younger sister of Radharani, will bestow her mercy on me and personally show me the Dham. We will go west to the Rasa Mandala, to the Dira didn't have a Sanskrit font. Dhira Samira, and then a little further to it's not with Sanskrit to something, and then to the bank of the Jamuna. Rupa Manjari, that's Rupa Goswami, will question my mistress Ananga Manjari, who will reply, this new maidservant will be engaged under Lalita Sakhi's direction. Her name is Kamala Manjari, and she is fixed in devotion to Sri Gauranga. Be merciful and give her spontaneous devotion to our lordships. Hearing this, Rupa Manjari will touch my body with her merciful hand, subtly imparting to me sublime spiritual emotions and the intense desire to worship in her footsteps. My complexion is like lightning, and my ornaments and dress sparkle like the midnight stars. I will appear with a camphor tray in my hand, and I will fall flat at her feet and beg from the unalloyed shelter of Sri Radha's lotus feet. Rupa Manjari and Ananga Manjari will take me to the private grove of Lalita, the charming mistress of Svananda Sukada Kunj. That's the name of the place where he resided in Navadvipa. He gave it that name. While he's doing worldly things for the government, this is his absorption on the spiritual platform. So Lalita is dwelling. They'll take me to the private grove of Lalita, the charming mistress of Svananda Sukada Kunj, who is dwelling inside, meditating on the service of Radharani's lotus feet. I will pay my full obeisances at her lotus feet. And Vishakha will explain to her my identity. This is one of the inhabitants of Navadvipa who wants to serve you and thereby serve the feet of Radha and Krishna. Lalita will be very pleased and will say to Ananga Manjri, the consort of Shesha, give her a place beside yours and carefully arrange her desired service. Take her along when you go to perform your service, and gradually she will receive the mercy of Sri Radha. Without Radha's mercy, how can the service of Radha and Krishna be attained? Hearing Lalita's words, Ananga Manjri will take me to her grove and make me her own maidservant. She shows her affection by graciously allowing me to accompany her when she goes to serve the divine couple. While performing my service, I catch a glimpse of Radha and Krishna in the distance. Then, perhaps, Radha will display her mercy by giving me an order and the shade of her lotus feet. Remaining always engaged in that service, I will gradually become expert. Thus I will please Radha and Krishna, who will sometimes give me their ornaments as a reward. As my dream breaks, I will weep softly, and as I cross the Ganges, I will look back at Sri Pulina, living near Isodhyana. That's his term for the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya, the center of Navadvipa Dham, Antardvipa. In my private grove, I will worship Gauranga, who is not different from Radha and Krishna. So, Rupa Goswami and Bhaktivinoda Thakur on the spiritual plane are very, very intimate associates. They're wanting for us to come to such stages of pure devotion. And so Rupa Goswami wrote some instructions for us. He left behind. There's a very nice verse in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that's describing great personalities. When they cross to the other side of material existence, they leave behind a boat for the rest of the world to come and reach that position. This is the boat. Get on board. The instructions are not difficult. They're perhaps to a certain degree obvious. But again, Bhaktivinoda Thakur advises us, as he's explaining these things repeatedly, a refrain is, understand these instructions very carefully, hear them very attentively, understand them very carefully, and apply them, and one will advance very nicely. But negligence will prohibit one from making nice spiritual advancement. So I can suggest two practical things that everyone can try to fulfill to get as much as possible from the time that we'll be spending together. Take notes if you are inclined to do that, and otherwise retain in your memory some understandings of things that you're hearing that with others who are present or others who are not present, you can share with them. Something that particularly strikes you and try to explain it according to your memory and your understanding of what you've heard. And another is, out of the so many things, nice instructions that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is going to be giving, think of one, two or three things, not too many, but some few things that you can practically apply and see from the inspiration gained from hearing from Bhaktivinoda Thakur the practical application of these things can help you advance on the path of devotional service, and that will be very nice. If collectively all the persons assembled can accomplish that, it will be very, very, very nice. There's one, before we begin, there's one final prayer I'd like to add. It's a prayer that glorifies, exemplifies the mood of approaching Rupa Goswami, and it glorifies Rupa Goswami. It's composed by Raghunath Das Goswami, who very much appreciated the association of Rupa Goswami, as you'll hear. It's a prayer, in a very, very humble prayer, to Rupa Goswami that he give his mercy, as he received from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The prayer is to receive Rupa Goswami's full mercy. So I'll recite the prayer, explain it a bit, and this will be, like, at least as far as I'm concerned, the theme of how we should approach ourselves to the subject matter and carry the subject matter deep within our hearts. Anadantas trinadantai dritam yatsna punah punah Srimad Rupa Padam Bhuja Dhuli Syam Punah Punah. Very simple prayer. The first line is describing the expression of humility with the straw of the street in one's teeth, just like Sanatana Goswami came before Lord Chaitanya. This verse expresses the prayer to Rupa Goswami that we come before you with the straw of the street, just like Trinadapi Sunichena. This trin means straw. It can also mean, it's translated sometimes as grass, but grass is less humble than straw. When you walk across the lawn, some of us may go outside to have our lunch outside, and you walk across the lawn, and when you step on the lawn, on the grass bends down. And after you walk away, comes back up again. So our own humility is sometimes like that too. In certain circumstances we can be humble, but then our ego returns very quickly. But straw stays flat. So like that. Anadantas trinadantai. Dantai. Teeth. Probably the word dentures is comes from. Dantai. There's a similar word in Polish. Dentures, teeth, dantai. Trin dantai, with straw in the teeth. Dridham, very strong, like Dridhavrata. Dridham, yatsna. Yatsna means beg. It's an outpouring of the heart, pleading of the heart. Dridham yatsna. Puna, puna. So we can approach Rupa Goswami in this mood with all humility. There's one little story that just comes to mind. There was one devotee, we were in India, in Vrindavan, on pilgrimage, and a devotee lost his ticket and passport, lost or stolen ticket and passport. So he was in great anxiety. And it was, remember that it was Pan Am, they don't exist anymore. There's a downtown Connaught Place in Delhi, there's the Pan Am building. So he didn't know what to do about his lost ticket and passport. So he went to the agent at the counter, put bunches of straw in his teeth, got down on his knees, was shaking his head pitifully. Please be merciful. Took the straw out to say it. Please be merciful. The man melted. I mean, picked him up and embraced him, and you are like my son. I will help you. What is that you need? What to speak of how compelling it is when it's genuine, when that kind of humility is genuinely there. Anadantas trinadantai dridham yachna puna puna, begging with great intensity again and again. Srimad rupa padambuja. Amba means water, lake, ocean, body of water. Ambuja, ja, takes birth. The lotus takes birth from the muddy waters at the bottom of the lake. Ambuja. He is begging Rupa Goswami for the mercy of his shelter of his lotus feet. But even more, dhuli means little fragment of dust. Dhuli sham, a little speck of dust from the lotus feet of Rupa Goswami. Again, puna, puna. So we can try to take up hearing from Rupa Goswami in the same mood, that he's giving he's carrying the fragrance of Lord Chaitanya's deep loving moods of ecstatic devotion, and he wants us to experience that. He's preparing us to have the qualification to experience that. So as he had such humility, we cannot even imagine his humility, but just a speck of a particle of the dust from the feet of Rupa Goswami can help to qualify us to appreciate to some degree Lord Chaitanya's great, great gift of love of God. And he's giving us some instructions, upadesh, that are nectar. Here's some things to avoid. Here's some things to culture. We offer our prayers to Rupa Goswami with all ye, as Prabhupada's, in Prabhupada's words, with all humility at our command, that these instructions of Rupa Goswami will benefit us and help us to become instruments of that same mission which he is the bearer of. Rupa Goswami is the bearer of Lord Chaitanya's mission. Prabhupada writes in Nectar Devotion, we are all Rupanugas, followers of Rupa Goswami. So may we become better representatives of him by hearing these instructions and by taking these instructions within our lives as devotees. So we'll start with the first of the six faults that destroy bhakti, namely atvyahara. First, Bhaktivinoda Thakur starts by explaining that Rupa Goswami is not guilty of the fault of redundancy, because it's one in literary composition, redundancy is a fault. Say something and say something and say something. It's a literary fault. So in the first verse, the first verse of Upadesha Amrita, or Nectar of Instruction, Vacho Vegam Manasa Krodha Vegam Jiva Vegam Udara Pasta Vegam. Jiva in this case means the tongue. So Rupa Goswami speaks that the urge, the vegam of the tongue, has to be controlled. Now, atyahara can mean eating. So he's already said you have to control your eating. So his logic is, Rupa Goswami isn't committing the fault of redundancy. Therefore, this word atyahara has to have further meaning beyond just what you do with your tongue, because he's already spoken about that. So he will speak about eating, overeating, atyahara, but it also means, in a broader sense, over collecting things for the senses. So he gives as a definition that atyahara in a broad sense means engaging the senses in a broad sense, engaging the senses in the mood of enjoyment, and considering gathering as things to be nearby your senses, so your senses have plenty of opportunities for enjoyment. This is a fault that obstructs or impedes bhakti. It destroys bhakti. Vinashati, shadvir, bhaktir, vinashati. So one should avoid that very carefully. He then moves on to say that the notion of removing the senses and sense objects, the contact with the sense objects and enjoyment of sense objects, making it zero, is a false premise. It's fallacious. It's a lie. It's something that cannot happen. There are doctrines that say like that, and he's boldly asserting it's not so. And then he supports that statement from Bhagavad Gita. And in Bhagavad Gita, he refers to the verses in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna explains that the soul is active. The soul has to, because it's active, engage in some type of work. Some type of work means the senses are coming in contact with some sense objects. And you can't refrain from that for even a moment. Confirmed. Contact with the senses is necessary. So then it becomes a matter of how you go about bringing the senses in contact with sense objects. One is to minimize it, and the other is the mood of it. So he's indicating, by analysis, by humble persuasion, this fault of atyahara has to be considered in terms of how much and the consciousness that you carry. How much the senses are engaged with objects, and in the mood in which you do so. He then moves to what scripture indicates as partial solutions and why they're partial solutions to this problem and the complete solution. And he goes through very quickly karma, gyan, then bhakti. And he says that they're progressive above behavior of animal that's unregulated, or people that are like animals that are unregulated. When there arises the understanding, as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, starting with the concept that there is a soul, that it's important for people that understand that there is a soul that they not further entangle themselves unnecessarily in the affairs of this world. And so, following the codes of religion, they regulate and try to elevate through that regulation, therefore karmakanda. In fact, the motivation of the persons who are doing such things is actually to become better at it. That is, on the downside, less entangled, and on the upside, more enjoyment. But then he explains the mentality is wrong. So from the regulated, those that follow the regulations of codes of religion, not only Vedic codes, other forms of religion, how to regulate the sense activities of this world so that higher grades of sense enjoyment and lesser are present and lesser grades are absent, theistically directed. Gradually, a deeper understanding of the soul is intended. And as that deeper understanding of the soul arises, then to a certain degree, detachment awakens through knowledge, through jnana, vairagya comes. Then comes the stage of jnana, or jnana yoga, where one deliberately goes out of one's way to reduce or eliminate involvement with the activities of the senses and worldly pursuits of any kind, and become more and more and more steeped in jnana, distinguishing matter from spirit and trying to stay on the side of spirit. That's also incomplete, because there's still sense contact and the purification of the senses has not taken place. When one can understand that, or Vasudeva Sarvamiti, that Krishna is everything, Bhuvanam Janmanam Ante Jnanavan Mam Prapadyate Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sardulabha. One comes to that position where one takes up devotional service. Therefore, he's reasoned, devotional service is the most effective and complete stage of dealing with this Atyahara problem. Step by step, so logical. Then he brings up another approach. He brings up the approach of constitutional and conditional. Constitutional simply means of the soul, and conditional means not of the soul, but of the coverings of the soul. We're conditioned by that which covers the soul, gross body and the subtle body, and the modes of material nature that conduct both of them. That's the conditional part. So one can try to deal with this problem, this shadvir bhaktir vinashati, that which destroys bhakti. Do you need a chair also? Yeah. You're sure? No. Okay. You're okay. You're not... Okay. He says that the other processes, these other processes that are partial, they deal with the conditional side of life. They don't directly address the constitutional side of life. Bhakti, and specifically Rupa Goswami, recommends that through the agency of bhakti, the constitutional or the spiritual solution for the material problem is effected if we cultivate bhakti. While dealing with regulating, it doesn't mean we throw other portions of the scripture away. We consider those things that are appropriate and inappropriate according to Varnashram, because he's outlined that. That's part of the duties of karmakanda personalities, is they have to fastidiously execute their duties, because that's where their perks come from. And the diminishing of the problems of being in contact with material energy comes through careful execution of duties. So it's not that when one takes up bhakti, you throw away duties, but it's not your means, it's not your, nor your end. Nor is release from the material circumstance your end, because that's another selfishness that also is binding or covering of one's constitutional consciousness. The constitutional consciousness is serving the personality of Godhead. And I'm going to, so far I've just been summarizing what Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote. I'm going to go off to the side over here and later on in this book, Bhakti Loka, he discusses tat-tat karma pravartanat. And tat-tat karma pravartanat, it means duties that you do, things that are tat-tat karma, things that are good. It gives lists, large, long list. We'll cover it a couple of days from now. The 64 items of bhakti found in nectar devotion. So one of them, this is a for example, one of them is that things that you're very, this is recommended by Rupa Goswami in nectar devotion, one should not accumulate, and things that you're, one should be very cautious about becoming too much attached to some particular thing. Another seminar, and I think it was in Dasamul by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I remember very, very vividly one of the exercises that he did was a he went around the room, everyone that was attending the class, he said, let's try to understand this instruction of Rupa Goswami. I'd like each of you to think about overnight what's something that you're very attached to, and tomorrow in class you can share that. What is that something that you're very attached to? And then you can think about whether you're willing to give that up. And then follow your heart and see what happens. Just think about giving up that thing that you're very attached to. It was a very, very practical lesson. I remember one devotee, I'll delete his name, young American, spirited fellow. He was really attached to his hooded sweatshirt. Because during Kartik, it's cold at night. And it was very practical having a hooded sweatshirt. You know, one of those with the nice pockets in the front, nice hooded sweatshirt. It was very, it could be warm even all night long in your sleeping bag, just warm as toast. And in the cold morning hours of the Vrindavan morning at Kartik time, being very, very comfortable. So the next day he was called upon, actually a well-known devotee, and he just blushed, he turned red, said, I'm attached to my sweatshirt. But I thought about it, and I'm going to give it away. Then another devotee had come with a really warm sleeping bag. In Vrindavan at night, at Kartik time, it can get very cold. In that particular season, it was very cold at night. He said, and I already gave it away. I gave it to Brajabihari. Because I know he's here, and you know he doesn't have much, and he's one of the school teachers, and even if he can't use it, he can find somebody that can use it. So I gave away my sleeping bag. So I got one of these scratchy old woolen blankets that they make here in Vrindavan. And think about that one, because we don't have 30 days like they did for the Vrindavan Kartik month. But things that you have that you may not require, but you're attached to, and think about giving them to someone. Even just and follow your mind. What happens? There's a couple of things that just on a personal note. Krishna Kumari, disciple who is now living in upstate New York, before her pregnancy she spent some time in Mayapur. She came to the Mayapur to just assist when I was there, and then stayed on for the Mayapur festival and stayed on for some time after everybody left the festival. And while she was there, she had Janani Vas engaged her, the head pujari engaged her in doing different things for the deities. It's a very special service because Matajis don't always get to do those kinds of things. And in the course of doing that special service, she found one jewel. It wasn't like a real jewel, it was custom jewelry. But she very responsibly took it to Janani Vas and said, I found this along with all the flowers that I was taking care of. And he said, oh, I recognize that. That belongs to Sudevi. Sudevi wants you to have it. You keep it. No, I can't keep it. It belongs to the deities. He said, no, she wants you to have it. Janani Vas is very transcendental. I mean, besides not just this particular thing, he sees things in a transcendental way. So he said, you keep it. You've done very nice service for Sudevi. She wants you to have it. You keep it. I insist. You keep it. And so she brought it back to New York, made a mirrored circular surface and a round circular plastic thing and a picture of Sudevi, and she gave it to me when she came back from Mayapur. I know what that meant to her. I mean, that was like, wow, reciprocation with one of the Ashtasakis in their deity form. And she wanted me to have it. So to this day, I keep that in a very special place in my office because of what it represents. I mean, it represents Rupa Goswami's instruction. And only she didn't sit in the class and hear it and follow it. She just, that was her disposition of heart. Another practical application of this is, I know another devotee whose name I'm going to edit out, but he has an atyahara tendency, and so he collects things. So since I've known him, once a year he gathers all his stuff together and he sorts through it all and he gives some of it away and then he puts the rest back. And I've watched him do this like a ritual way every year. And I say, Prabhu, what are you doing? And he explains, I know I have this tendency. So in principle, I try to give things away. And then over the course of the next year, I try to be more careful about accumulating more stuff. There's one of our devotees in the temple in Chicago. He collects a lot of things. And we try to help him understand. He gets it for a little while, but so Rupa Goswami's teaching here is it inhibits bhakti, or in stronger language, it destroys bhakti. So we should take this instruction to heart. Hear it carefully. Try to carefully understand it and try to apply it. Things that are not necessary, we don't accumulate those things. Or another way that this instruction can be understood is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says in his Brahmanism and Vaishnavism, some of you may have seen that book, or know of the history at least. It was a very serious conflict that was arising between devotees and the non-devotee intellectuals, the Brahmos. And they were very strong about Brahmanas are best, and being down upon the Vaishnavas, who weren't necessarily asserting themselves, but they were practicing in a way that Brahmanas didn't find agreeable. And there was a, you know how it goes, one of those things, you know, like a tussle. And it had escalated practically to a national scale. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was requested to be the presiding personality to deal with this situation, with national conference, only his health was terrible. And he indicated to his disdain that, where is there in this world, is there only one person that can address this situation? How much things have deteriorated. So his son, Bhaktisiddhanta, said, I will do. If you give me the instruction, I will do. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very pleased. And so he wrote a paper. You know how these things go amongst intellectuals. You write papers. And it's in our library. I saw it this morning at the Kishore Mandir. It's been published in a book. So he read his paper, and it took like a day and a half to read his paper. It was a long paper. The first half of the paper is glorifying the brahmanas, because there's so many statements in the scriptures that glorify the position of brahmanas. So the brahmanas were fired up. They were very much, yes, Bhaktisiddhanta, he's a great scholar. He understands things as they are. And after they were on board, then he went, the glories of the Vaishnavas. And the glories of Vaishnavism is such that actually a realized Brahmana is a Vaishnav. And if one is not a realized Brahmana, then one who is, whatever their birth may be, their realization and their quality and their practices establish them in a superior position. And verse after verse after verse after verse after verse. And the Brahmanas were becoming a little more discouraged. And by the end of the assembly, he received a standing ovation from everybody present that lasted for like a half an hour. Just stunning. And Bhaktisiddhanta, he was just a brahmachari. He was like 30 years old, surrounded by all kinds of puffy waffies that were twice his age. So the police had to surround him, like a cordon of police, to escort him out of the room, because he refused to let people touch his feet. And they were insisting to touch his feet. So finally, the crowd was so rowdy, the police officer brought his feet over by a bucket of water and forcibly stuck his feet in the water. Told him, you can leave. And then he sprinkled the water, because otherwise it would have been a riot. And in this essay, I was requested by Trikala Gya in Potomac Temple one time to give a seminar on the duties of a brahmana, because he needed more pujaris. Anyway, I made that presentation from this essay by Bhaktisiddhanta, and in it, one of the most prominent things as a theme for the qualities, the characteristics of a brahmana, is simplicity. And it very immediately addresses this atyahara. Simplicity externally comes from simplicity internally. So one who lives where there's not lots of accumulated stuff, that's just an indication of the internal situation of accumulated stuff. The brahmana is very, very simple and straightforward. He used those words almost like piggyback, just like tandem, the two things. Simple and straightforward. And as an example, he used it several times in the essay, that a person who is straightforward is, when asked something, they'll always speak the truth, even if that truth it compromises their situation or seems to endanger their something. You know, whatever. They have no vested interests in this world. Their interests are otherworldly, and so whatever happens, the outcome of the conditional world, they're fixed in the constitutional position. The solution to the complexities of life are being fixed in the spiritual position. So that's the antidote that Rupa Goswami is recommending for over-collecting. Just engage in the service of the lotus feet of the devotees of the Lord, which will connect us to the lotus feet of the Lord. And doing that with great earnestness and sincerity. And as far as dealings with this world, being simple and straightforward. So two of the things that Bhaktivinoda Thakur addresses in this chapter. One is the principle of yukta vairagya. Again, this is a phrase coined by Rupa Goswami. It finds its way right in the text itself. Does anybody know that there's two companion verses, the incomplete renunciation and complete renunciation? Anasaktasya Vishayan. You know the verse?
Anasaktasya Vishayan Yatarham Upayunjata Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe Yuktam Vairagya Mukshate.
And then the other one, Prapanchakataya.
Prapanchakataya Buddhya Prajvastu Sambandhina Mumukshavi Parityago Vairagyam Phalgu Khatyate.
Very good. So, Phalgu Vairagya is false renunciation. And yukta vairagya is complete renunciation. Again, he's making a contrast between trying to make things zero, this position of senses, having contact with sense objects, making them 100% absent. It's false. It's fallacious. It's phony. It's not possible. So the second verse says, Hari sambandhu vastuna, those things that have sambandha means relationship. Sambandha, like sambandha gyan. Those things that have a relationship with Hari, vastu means like stuff, things. Things that have a relationship with Hari, and you give them up. That kind of renunciation is false renunciation, or gentler is to say, incomplete renunciation. The complete form of renunciation is recognizing that all things belong to Hari and addressing them as the property of Hari and yourself as the servant of Hari. And engaging them in the Lord's service, that's complete renunciation. And Prabhupada's very simple way of expressing this is the example of finding a $100 bill. So, false renunciation would be to say, I don't see it, and just keep walking. Materialistic way is, no one's looking, I'll put it in my pocket. It's up for grabs. And the complete form of renunciation is finding out its owner. Now, how are you going to advertise? Anybody lose a $100 bill out there? Just come forward. I got one. But the principle is finding out the proprietor of things and engaging those things in the service of the proprietor of those things. So we come into this world owning nothing, and we leave the world owning nothing. And generally, the whole life is spent very busily trying to make so many things ours. That's false. And trying to make it zero, that's also false. Or it's an incomplete form of renunciation. So this Atyahara principle is addressed most effectively. It can be, the scripture gives conditional ways to address it. It gives constitutional ways to address it. Engage in devotional service. With your whole heart, see things in relation to Krishna, see yourself in relation to Krishna, see others in relation to Krishna. They're not objects for your enjoyment, but they're parts and parcels of Krishna, to be engaged in Krishna's service. So, yukta vairagya. Principle. And then the last part is grihastas and renunciates. How did this principle of detachment apply differently for grihastas and for renunciates? For renunciates, it's real simple. Accumulating things, there's no space for it. period. End of discussion. For householders, they have some duty to take care of the family members. So then that becomes, where do you draw the line? So the where you draw the line is simple. If it's simple for the simple. Simple for those who are straightforward and simple in their approach to life. What you require, you accept. What you don't require, you see that it's used in Krishna's service. And that's your responsibility. Isavasya idam sarvam. From Ishapanishad. And again, this principle of, even for householders, regular reviewing, what is it that we don't need? That's an easier question to answer than what is it that we need. That becomes fuzzy. What is it that we don't really need? And distribute it. And again, what is it that we're really attached to? Not that you have to do it, but look at that thing and the feelings connected to that thing, and consider what's going to happen if you die the next moment. You're really attached to something. But 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I flew back, I think it was from Chicago, to New York for New York Rath Yatra, and somebody picked me up at LaGuardia Airport. I thought it was going to be really good. I could just, the morning of Rath Yatra, get in the car, go to Rath Yatra, at the end of Rath Yatra, go home to the temple. So they parked the car, they put everything in the back of the trunk, and put the car in a parking lot, and they took me back to the temple. We got there. The driver was very nervous. What happened? He said somebody broke into the car when it was in the parking lot. Let's go take a look. And they just took the computer and something else that looked like it was of value, but it wasn't. They left up my dhotis and all the things I'm really attached to, and the computer was gone. And somehow it just didn't affect me. And I was staying in the same room with Jayadwaita Maharaj, and he commented, I was at Panihati Festival last year, and I had some special earplugs from some ear specialist, because his hearing is practically gone. And it's at the Panihati Festival in Atlanta, and he lost them. He said, I was so burned out. Because they're so costly, it's so much trouble, and I have to go back to the guy and get replacements. And I'm just, you know, that your computer's gone and you're as cool as a cucumber. I said, what can I do? I can't lament, because that's what good is that going to do? I tell you one thing, I'm never going to leave my stuff in a car again overnight. Certainly not in New York. So if any of you are driving me somewhere and I'm very particular about taking stuff out of the car, you'll know why. I don't want it to happen again. But lose something, or even think of losing something or giving something away, and see where your feelings go. I'll tell you something about what it is that we're attached to. Okay, now I'll just make a quick summary of what Prabhupada's points are from Nectar of Instruction, and we'll call it a close. That the theme of what comes in Nectar Devotion on this Adhyahara topic is one of Prabhupada's favorite phrases, simple living, high thinking. Like a refrain for what he wanted our Krishna consciousness movement, and particularly our rural communities, to epitomize: simple living, high thinking. He spoke or he wrote about the grihastha making a very simple economic solution. You know the one. 1 acre of land and 1 cow. I economic solution taken care of, then the rest of your time high thinking. So a lot of complexities of life comes from how you involve yourself in the economic department of life. And to a certain degree, the very nature of this modern world is just very complex because people aren't simple. They have high expectations. And even to have something that's simple, it's hard to do that because the atmosphere is so complex. Therefore, Prabhupada quotes the very, very wonderful verse that he liked to quote a lot, and I particularly relish it very, very much. From the second chapter of the first canto, Dharmasya hi apavargasya narto tayopakalpate. This verse that instructs that dharma, or duties of religion, should never be executed for the purpose of gaining artha, or wealth. And that's a radical notion. Your occupation is not for the purpose of developing your capacity for wealth. Rather, it's for ultimate liberation. Doing those duties, now this is this constitutional argument of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, for the satisfaction of Krishna. Do them, in fact, how your whole approach to life is, here I have this body. Now I have so many choices I have to make. What am I going to do with this body? And that's because largely the persons assembled here are in family life. This body belongs to Krishna, therefore the way I dress myself to my family duties is as service to Krishna. Part of my service to Krishna is I have some occupation. I do that occupation for Krishna. I use the fruits of the occupation for Krishna. I maintain the house for the service of Krishna and for the care of Krishna's parts and parcels, my dependents, my family members. If Prabhupada's reasoning is, if one embraces this principle of life, then all the complexity of artificial amenities and the whole lifestyle that's surrounding it, considering them necessities if you don't have them, it fades. It doesn't impact the life of a devotee to the degree that we embrace this principle. And the opposite, or the default side, if we, to the degree that we fail to embrace that principle, hard labor. And the way Prabhupada describes this in Nectar, in Isha Upanishad, the energies of the Lord work in such a way that if one does not take that shelter, one has so much to do. One is laboring, 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 laboring. And we ask somebody, my dear sir, take this book. No, I have no time. Chant this mantra. No, I have no time. No, I have no time. Because that's the external energy, just exercising them like anything. However, if one takes shelter of service to the Lord, one finds the time. The internal potency acts one way and the external potency acts another way. It's like Prabhupada's example of electricity. One energy works for cooling or for heating according to the direction of the electrician. Krishna is that master electrician and it's his energy. And those that don't turn their attention to the Supreme, they have no time. They have given so much to do, so much to do, so much to do, so much to do, and more than they can do. That's just how it works. How the Lord's energy works. So this principle is a very important principle to adhere to be happy. Aside from being stressed out with zillions of things to do, he explains, Prabhupada explains, the principles of Dharma start to warp. That is, in order to justify this lifestyle that I have, I start creating a whole other set of notions about what is religion. It's called New Age. And so many other names. as we know that India isn't unknown to have other ideas of religion besides descending understandings from disciplic succession. Lifestyle warps and dharma warps, and people's minds warp. And certainly, the purpose behind the principles of religion is lost. So, upavarga, ultimate liberation, that's the purpose of our religious duties. And when that's in place, the accumulation is, it's not in our hearts, because it's not the purpose. Fulfilling the happiness of the Supreme Lord, that's our purpose. So he gives, I just end with this, he gives the conclusion of the Nectar of Instruction teachings. Economic solution, keep it simple. Sense gratification, minimize it. Bare necessities is Prabhupada's term. What you require to maintain body and soul together. Now that's the ideal standard, and we should work, not shouldn't be fanatical, but work towards that standard, cultivate that objective. And as far as shelter, use the main thrust of his argument or his presentation is use our vital energy to take shelter of the internal potency of the Lord through starting with hearing and chanting and rendering our services in that mood according to the instructions that we hear from the scriptures. And this way the allurements of the external energy subside. Our continence becomes peaceful, and we can proceed nicely along spiritual path. Hare Krishna. Okay, so any questions or points you'd like to bring up from this break time? Yeah.
Sometimes I have the tendency to buy things and I justify it like, oh, this is for Radha Damodar and it's okay. And sometimes my husband says, no, it's not okay. It's like, when do you draw the line? Because sometimes it's hard for me to agree with him because he thinks I'm going overboard, but I don't think I'm going overboard. But when do you draw the line?
Listen to him. Sridham likes that answer.
You go through that.
Well, in general, it's good to hold ourselves, hold our decisions accountable to others. We could say, you know, the other way around. Supposing he is contemplating, let's buy a third computer. And you might say, do we really need this third computer? I think that's going overboard. So, you know, looking to hold our decisions, particularly in this, since we're on this topic of acquiring things, as a principle, what I personally hold is when there's some idea to secure something, I don't act on it. And if it keeps coming and keeps coming, then I'll still give it a second thought, third thought, ask some other people, and then still I'm reluctant. When it's really clear that it's needed, then okay. Then, willingly, go for it. Still be careful in the matter of expenditure, but even just whether to make it or not. If it's not easy, do without it. I'm getting by without it. Or that's, you know, for personal use, then for service to the Lord. Sometimes, I'm thinking of a particular example, but sometimes simple is beautiful. It's not that we want the Lord to be in a position of austerity. Krishna should not be, not like that. Anyway, I know somebody that got an elaborate, expensive altar, and it's not even as nice as the altar that they used to have. The other was simple, elegant, very, very, very nice. Very nice. And their husband said, I like it the way that it is. And the wife, but I want for the deities. And then I spoke with them after they had the altar, and she said, yeah, that's right. Yes.
One of the two sometimes get attached to, let's say, something that you're using in Christian service, some device or something.
What might you be speaking of? That's not good. That's not good. I'll share with you Prabhupada's instructions. I heard on three occasions that I can recall, like specifically, personally, at his association. When facility is there, we use it. And if the facility is not there, the test is, are you happy without it? So think of those objects. And can you be very happy without it? So you don't have to answer right now, but just, you can serve Krishna in a forest and be happy. Taking it off of you for a moment, some of our householders are in the process of buying homes. So as they're buying homes, there's some contemplation. Uh-oh. Are we just setting ourselves up for getting attached? And then our children just getting attached. And it happens, right? I mean, so it's worth being cautious about. That doesn't mean don't do it or don't use it or don't have it, and you know, don't employ it in Krishna's service. But one should be very thoughtful, because in fact it could be taken away. And then what happens? You know, the moment of truth comes out, because it will be taken away. Or you'll be taken away from it, or it'll be taken away from you, one or the other. Whatever it is. And so, are you attached to Krishna's service, or are you attached to the object? Okay, so then if that service is the attachment, but the facility is taken, suppose you lose your eyesight, suppose you lose your ability to walk. So what happened to the Brahmana that was worshipping his deity, but he became so elderly he was unable to do it? He did in his mind. He wasn't depending upon the device. And we can serve Krishna in other ways too. If Krishna so desires, we can serve Krishna in whatever way he wants. If Krishna wants, that's the Yukta Vairagya principle. One can be in this situation, one can be in that situation, and be perfectly happy. Perfectly happy. Serving Krishna this way, serving Krishna. I'll give it one example. Devotees had asked Prabhupada to pose for some pictures that they could use on the altar, right, cameras? And so Prabhupada agreed, but he wanted to use the opportunity for instructing his disciples. The first pose was, Prabhupada had no kurta, just his uttari, his dhoti top draped across his chest, and in a very simple saffron cotton cloth and dhoti. And he stood under, just before, like with a big shade tree in the background, and just before the shade of the shade tree. And so it was, you know, he orchestrated the thing. He was the director of photography. It stood there with the tree in the background, so it's a very clear contrast. Very serious look, holding his danda. And, you know, cameras. So then he went and changed, and he put on a bright orange silk with long sleeve kurta, and with a purple crushed velvet backdrop. You know, an opulent. And he came out for the photography, and he put his hand over his head like this and did a little pirouette. And then he said, for Krishna, we can do anything. We can live in simplicity, or we can accept opulence and not be attracted or repulsed by either one. And he posed. If Krishna so desires, that's the important phrase. Not your desire should be what Krishna desires. If Krishna so desires, then this service. And if Krishna desires otherwise, one devotee asked Prabhupada, is it okay to be attached to a particular service? Prabhupada's answer was, when assigned to do that service by the spiritual master, you should be attached to that service. But if the spiritual master says you should do some other service, then you should transfer that attachment to the other service and be equally attached to that other service. That's the test. Is it my satisfaction or is it Krishna's satisfaction? Should we put you to the test? You passed that test. You were attached to worshiping Lord Jagannath, and you were instructed that someone else worship Lord Jagannath. And you were really attached. And it's devotional attachment. But you followed the instruction. So there's an indication of... I saw you upstairs this morning doing your little private arti. Okay. Someone else? Yes.
How does having a straw in the bead signify?
It's just traditional. The straw is the most humble, and you put the straw in your teeth. I'm going to speak something. So that's what I get out of it anyways. It's a traditional thing, and that's what my understanding of what's behind the tradition. The most insignificant thing. I come before you bearing this in my teeth. It's like, you know, touching someone's feet, because the feet are the lowest part of the body and the feet are walking across all kinds of dirty things, but your feet are, what to speak of the rest of you, your feet are worshipable by me, means all of you is worshipable. And even lower than that is the straw. It's underneath the feet. And it's humble, it just stays down. Dandavats, all the time. And I come before you in that mood. You could put it on your head, I suppose, or hold it in your hand, in your teeth. The words that I speak are with humility. Yes. We should. The question that Prabhupada was asked by a particular disciple was being attached to the activity. And he said it's okay based on being instructed by the spiritual master to do so. If the instruction changes, my attachment is to the spiritual master, and so the attachment changes to another activity. Now, instructions are given to match one's nature, conveniently. But sometimes instructions are given to test the faithfulness of a disciple, or a student, or whatever. Or to strengthen the spiritual side and diminish the material side of one's attachment. In principle. When one receives such an instruction, that's very special. That's not something to be afraid of. It's something that's it's a great fortune if one receives some instruction like that. Prabhupada indicated that he would not give such instructions to devotees that were not able to perform, not strong. But like a classic was Prabhupada's instructing Tamal Krishnaraj to go to China. And he gave all kinds of arguments. And but Prabhupada was insisting, Krishna has spoken through your mouth. Prabhupada, you might as well just send me to China. And he said, as he, Tamal Krishnaraj said, as I spoke that, I thought, oh no. Prabhupada's going to pick up on it. And Prabhupada, yes, he smiled. Krishna has spoken through you. You should go to China. So if the instruction of the spiritual master is very strong, most strong for the disciple. We had this discussion, the application of this principle at our GBC meeting last year. We were discussing, is it ever appropriate for a disciple in the presence of their spiritual master to initiate? And in short, long, it's been going on for several years, but the short answer was, it has happened in the past scripturally, you know, historically. It has happened. Bhakti Siddhanta and Prabhupada both very strongly indicated it's against etiquette to do so, it should not be done. But if the order of one's guru is to do so, that is very strong. So there was some issue that there was a particular application of that, and that was the Jayadvaita Swami wanted Kadambakanana to initiate. Kadambakanana Swami. But he was his sannyas guru, and anyway, there's details, but gave him permanent Gayatri initiation. Also, so it's the same principle with a different application. The instruction of the spiritual master is what should guide our life. That's part of it. That's part of what it means to be a disciple, to be disciplined. And the disciplining agent is the instruction. Just like Krishna's instruction from whatever and wherever the mind wanders, bring it back. That's an instruction. Very strong. Mind is very strong, but Krishna's instruction is stronger. If we adhere to the instruction, we have the capacity to fulfill the instruction. So being attached to a particular activity, generally speaking, just take it as a rule of thumb, generally speaking, it's conditional. It's due to our material conditioning that we're attached to something. It's not a constitutional thing. Krishna told us to be attached to something. So we have to transfer that material makeup of our attachments to a constitutional makeup of our attachments. And instructions that we receive are the agents for doing that. So our attachments to those persons that are giving those instructions makes the attachment to the instruction easy. or easier for Tamal Krishnaraj to hear, go to China. He wouldn't have accepted it from anybody except Prabhupada. But he went to China. And what wonderful thing has come from that? That instruction of Prabhupada. And his submission to Prabhupada's instruction. Although initially, you know, a little feisty, but he followed it. To his credit. Anything else? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Is only this wrong for time, right?
Yeah.